Chasing Shadows by T.A. Williams and read by Helen Duff for Saga Egmont. Prologue. High Pyrenees, January 1314. The monks found her, where she had been discarded. Her body lay draped across the frozen rock, arms outstretched in futile supplication. The flapping of her bloodied cloak, the only noise in that desolate and inhospitable wilderness. Anything that moved had long since been swept away by the relentless onslaught of the wind that scythed across the barren snowfield at the top of the pass. Nothing survived there for long, and it was little short of a miracle that they reached her before she, too, shared the same fate as her travelling companions. The congealed blood on her bare limbs and the dark red of the rock upon which she had suffered were almost identical in colour, and it was only the movement of the shreds of clothing that told them there was indeed a body there. They wrapped her in a coarse blanket and carried her back to the hospice, few of them daring to think that they would be able to offer her any more than a Christian burial. And yet, in spite of her ordeal, in spite of her wounds, and in spite of the ravages of cold and exposure, she did not die. All that day, and all through the night, she lay unconscious and immobile, to all intents and purposes, dead. Only the hint of breath on the doctor's mirror convinced them that she had not relinquished her hold upon life. They could do little but keep her warm and pray. Then, finally, just after dawn the next day, she stirred. The monk on duty beside her bed stooped and looked down into her face as her eyes opened. He took two steps backwards, instinctively crossing himself as he turned on his heels and scuttled off in search of the doctor. By the time they returned, her hands were over her face, probing and touching. The doctor reached out and took her hands in his, murmuring softly,
"How are you feeling now?"
The effect of his voice was dramatic. As she felt the touch of the old man's hand, she jerked herself away from him so violently that she would have fallen right off the bed had there not been another monk there to catch her. She twisted and turned, struggled and fought, until she was finally pinned to the bed by four perspiring monks, with the aid of the abbot himself, who had come to see the cause of the commotion. Only then did her spirit of resistance leave her. Her body froze into rigidity, the only visible signs of life, an uncontrolled trembling of her lips, and tears that ran down her cheek. The abbot leaned towards her and spoke quietly, but with authority.
"Young lady, you have been through much, much more than any human being should ever have to experience. But by the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, you have survived, and you shall recover."
The last words were spoken with all the strength of his faith, and the trembling and the tears gradually stopped. At a sign from him, the monks cautiously released their restraining grip, and they all looked on anxiously. The abbot waited a few moments, and then, with his thumb and forefinger, he drew the sign of the cross on her forehead, the outline of which remained clearly etched into the sweat that beaded her brow. For a seemingly interminable length of time, there was no reaction. Until, just as the monks were starting to eye each other nervously, her lips moved.
"I'm blind."
Her words were barely audible, and they all instinctively bent lower over the bed to catch the rest of what she might say. But there was no more. At last, it was the doctor who broke the silence.
"There's no wounds at the eyes. You have cuts and bruises to other parts of your body."
One or two of the younger monks.